From the Secret Cabal Studios, it's the Secret Cabal Express. Today, Tony, Chris, and Jamie discuss dice. And now, please welcome the Secret Cabal Founders.
Hey now, Cabalists, and welcome to another episode of the Secret Cabal Express. This is Jamie.
Tony here.
Hey, this is Chris.
Well, dear Cabalists, I'd like to give you a little update on one of the big projects we had going on this year, one of the goals from our Kickstarter a few months ago, and that is the official Secret Cabal Discord channel. Now, I'll be honest, after the Kickstarter, I took a little time off from working on any of that stuff because I've been working on the Kickstarter so much before, I just needed a little break from it. But I'm happy to report that the Discord channel has been created. It's ready to go. We're in our soft launch phase right now. The soft launch basically is I invited all of the founders and all the lords and all the, you know, the hosts of the shows and a bunch of our closer friends to the Discord so that we can try it out, so that we can, you know, make sure that all the permissions are right, all of the roles are set up properly, all that different stuff, because there it could be bad if any of that stuff doesn't work right. So we're doing the soft launch now, so we're all going to hack at it real good and make sure that everything's up and running. And as soon as we're comfortable that this thing is solid and ready for consumption from the public, we are going to launch this sucker. And I'm so happy because, you know, Tony and Chris, you're both in there right now. You haven't done anything in there yet, but you're getting there.
I joined the server.
Yes,
yeah,
you
do. Me too. I haven't figured out how to use it yet.
I just didn't say anything. I'm lurking. I'm watching. I see what that skunk ape is up to in there.
That's true. Yeah, the skunk ape is already running rampant through the Secret Cabal Discord. Chris, you don't know how to use it? What do you mean you don't know how to use it?
I know how to use it. I just haven't gone in yet.
Oh, I get you. Well, I'll tell you, I'm so happy about this Discord because I was very resistant to the idea of creating an official Secret Cabal Discord channel. And that's because we've been using our Board Game Geek Guild forums for so long that I felt really bad. I mean, we got a lot of users over on the guild. I mean, I think there's like somewhere around 5,500 Board Game Geek users that are subscribed to our forums. And it was such an easy thing for us because everybody's already a member of Board Game Geek. Most of the people that listen to our show probably have a Board Game Geek account or use Board Game Geek. So it wasn't hard for them to just jump over and like click and start interacting, right? Well, Discord's a brand new thing. We got to get people to go to it. Now, there's a lot of people using Discord these days, so they're not going to be a problem. But for those who aren't using Discord as a chat program, this is a new thing that you have to install on your phone. You have to, install on your desktop, whatever you're going to do. And I was a little worried about that because I also don't want to abandon our Board Game Geek forums because I think they're great over there. And some people like to use that format better. So I'm not getting rid of the Board Game Geek forums. This is not replacing that. This is in addition to that. This is a new way for us to interact. But that's also another thing that I was very concerned about Discord is how to interact with it, because it is a chat program, really. When it comes down to it, this is not the same as a forum. It's a type of interaction that's a little more difficult to follow the stream of consciousness that is the conversation from a chat program, particularly when it's going to get a little larger than you're used to. But one of the great things about Discord is they recently implemented the ability to have actual forums within your Discord servers. So we can have chat channels and we can have forum channels, in addition to, of course, streaming audio and streaming video with anybody in there watching. You know, it's going to be a really, really neat new tool for us to get involved with the audience a little more. So I can't wait to launch this sucker so we can get the Cabalists in there and get gabbing.
There needs to be another rule in here that says don't donate to Steve. You need to add that.
True. Chris is referring to that we have our server rules, and most of them are just about conduct throughout the Discord. And yes, you're absolutely right. I think we should put in something like no matter how much Steve asks, do not feed him.
It's like, don't feed the bears. Don't give Steve money.
I agree with that.
Well, there you go, Jamie. I figured it out. I am on there right now.
Well, good for you, Chris. I appreciate that. Well, all right. Just to recap, the Discord is not launched yet. It will be launched soon. You will hear about it on the podcast. You'll hear about it on all our social media. We'll have it over on Board Game Geek, and I'm going to post it on Kickstarter as an update so everybody can get in on the Discord. Now, I want to be very clear about this, that this Discord server is not for supporters of the Secret Cabal only. It is for every single person out there that would like to be a part of it. Now, I know that generally podcasts and things, they'll make, you know, the Discord server will be, if you support, you get access to the Discord server, you get extra content, you get all this different stuff. Well, we don't really like to do that here. I know that it probably is stupid of me to not do that, but I am not a good businessman. I just want to put out fun content that people enjoy, and I want everybody to join the party, whether they can support us or not. So you'll be hearing about that probably within the next month, probably a couple weeks from now, you'll be getting the link to join the Discord server. You jump in, you agree to our server rules, which will include don't feed Steve, and you can get in on the fun and discussion that's happening over there. So with that, why don't we get on to our discussion topic proper? And today's discussion topic, I want to apologize, Cabalists. The show is going to be a little bit shorter than it normally is today because Chris is on a timetable. He's got a business meeting that he has to get to, and we're kind of crunching this in as soon as we can. Our scheduling was a little weird the past couple of weeks here. So I apologize that the Express episode is a little more Express than normal. The topic of the day is something that is very near and dear to every tabletop gamer's heart out there, whether you're a board gamer, a role player, a miniatures gamer. It's something that we all have a love-hate relationship with, and that is dice. And honestly, this dice concept can be sort of translated as randomness in our games, but really dice is the sole focus that I wanted to talk about today. And it's something that I've been wanting to talk about a lot lately because we've been playing a lot of games that have a heavy emphasis on dice, one way or the other. And it's been getting into my brain to talk about what it is that makes dice either fun or not fun, or, you know, strategic or not strategic, whatever it is. What is it that dice do to either enhance or detract from our experience at the table? And of course, dice is not something new. It's not a new mechanism for gaming. This goes back to the ancient times. The Romans would use knuckle bones, and these are bones from the ankles of sheep and goats. And they were six-sided, and they would use them as dice. They also used to make artificial versions of the actual knuckle bones out of various materials. And of course, the cubical dice that we use today, like a six-sided die, they've been finding cubical dice just like the ones we use today in Chinese excavations since 600 BCE and in Egyptian tombs since 2000 BCE. And now I'm going to have to read this one or I'm going to screw it up. The first written records of dice are found in the ancient Sanskrit epic of Mahabharata. This was composed in India over 2000 years ago. So clearly dice have done something right to have been around for more than 2,000 years, working their way into our games. So what do you say, guys? How about we embark on a short journey through the beloved game component, dice?
When am I not ready to talk about dice? I wake up in the morning and I'm thinking about dice.
Okay, then. I didn't know what to say to that. Talking about...
So let's start off with the easiest question of all, the simplest, probably the silliest question of all. Chris, tell me, what is your favorite out of all the dice that you've ever played with? What is your favorite and why?
All the dice I've ever played with. I have a place in my heart for the 100-sided D&D die. I think just because it is absolutely 100% ridiculous. It's absurd. It's basically a ball that rolls around on the table, rolls off the table. It's crazy that they actually even came up with a 100-sided die. But it's probably the one die that I think about more than any other die that I've played with.
You actually think about the 100-sided die?
Yeah, it actually, like, randomly, if I it comes into my head when I think of something that's just absurd and stupid and like pointless. And for some reason, I always just think of the 100-sided die.
What about you, Tony? What is your favorite die of all the die that exist?
Favorite die? I don't know if I have a single favorite. I like those metal dice. I got some metal dice at Origins one year. that I really like. Back when metal dice weren't as common, like I feel like they've had an upward swing of the metal die and the metal dice here lately. Now they're a lot easier to get, but back when I was a kid, metal dice were hard to come by. So I have some metal die, from you know, probably a decade ago at this point that I just like those.
Now, I imagine that it's probably a lot easier today to machine those dice or to actually 3D print dice using metal, something like that, than it used to be. It was probably like super, super expensive. You had to like cast them and stuff years ago, but now it's probably really easy.
Yeah, there's CNC machines have come a long way that can just like carve out little engravings on metal.
Sure.
Yeah, so like the fabrication of these have come a long way. There, people are doing some interesting and innovative things nowadays with, you know, all this technology that we have. So,
finding new amazing ways to create dice that don't land on a flat side and kind of land on a corner.
See, I think this is great, Chris. Listen, this is awesome. So there's a forum post over on our Board Game Geek forums, and it goes, "Tony answers only. Games that fired other games." Now, Tony wasn't here in the last episode when we did that discussion topic, but we commented about how Tony always breaks the spirit of the question. Just about every time we come up with a discussion topic, so the Cabalists are coming up with Tony-only answers. And I think it's funny that I ask, I ask Tony, what is his favorite die? And, you know, almost everybody's thinking like, oh, is it the one, the four-sided die, the six-sided die, the 10, the 20? Tony comes up with the metal. you think about things differently, Tony, and that's what makes you great for the podcast.
I have my own sort of alien brain, I guess.
That's absolutely, yeah. and it's appreciated. My favorite die is fairly mundane. It is an eight-sided die, and I'll tell you why. There is no real good reason, but I can try to describe it. For some reason, when I pick up an eight-sided die, it always feels right. Comparatively to the other polyhedral dice, it always has the proper weight. I like the shape of it. I like when I roll it. It feels good when it rolls, and I like having a handful of eight-sided dice and rolling them at the same time. Now, that's the problem, because most games do not have dice pools that involve eight-sided dice. Usually, it's either tens or sixes. But eight-sided die, I think, are the perfect dice. And I bet
you don't like the four-sided caltrops that you can throw down when the Sasquatch is chasing you?
Four-sided dice are bullshit.
What?
Four-sided die is bullshit. I'll tell you, like, we just played the last week for the first time, Now or Never, the new Ryan Lockett, not new Ryan Lockett game. It's about a year old-ish, but it's the first time we played it. And I got, Tony, you got to get a hold of Now or Never, by the way. It's amazing. It's terrific. It's my favorite of the three, the trilogy of Above and Below, Near and Far, and Now or Never is the next one, is the greatest one. But in this game, the combat mechanics revolve around a four-sided die. Now, in play, in action, in the game, it feels really good. Like, it's a really cool mechanism, and having four different options for your attacks, and you roll the die to see which one happens is great. But it's a four-sided die, and the problem is that you throw the four-sided die, and it always just lands however it landed. It doesn't bounce. It doesn't roll. The four-sided die is the biggest piece of crap. If they made it a little heavier, maybe, but the shape is bad. The pyramid is a bad shape for a die, and I think they need to fix that.
Well, that's the thing. Like, historically, the four-sided die was very common, but it was actually six-sided, but it was skinny, long and skinny, and you'd roll it.
Yeah.
Like the bone die.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, like if you look at, like, Viking bones, like the die that they used in games, people, some of the, I think anyway, like, I'm not, you know, a historian on Viking dice or anything.
Yeah,
but,
well, you know.
I've seen pictures on the internet.
Yeah. We've been known to make things up too, Tony, so it's cool.
There's like a, you know, you would roll them, and it was sort of like a long, like the bones were long and skinny, and you would have sort of like carve it out so that there were four sides, and you'd mark the four different sides, and you'd roll them. Like, when you roll the bones, that was my understanding of how that was done, and those were often four-sided. Sometimes I think they were three-sided, too, because you'd carve like a triangle, but it was like a long, skinny triangle.
I just did a Google search, Tony, and I see exactly what you're talking about. It's like a long, rectangular, you know, chunk of, like, stone or bone or something like that. And on each side, it has dots, 1 through 4 dots.
Yeah, yeah.
And you roll, you kind of roll it like it's a, you know, like a stick, and it lands on its right side. I like that better, Tony. I think that that is a better four-sided die than the four-sided die we have today.
That's how they would do like the shaman would read the bones too. It was sort of like,
oh,
they would roll, they would, well, you roll a die, but you would.
Yeah, they're rolling on a chart. Wow, thank you guys so much for supporting that joke.
Yeah, well, that's a different kind of game.
Four-sided die is the die of shame. I hate it because it's like, you're the mage, you cast your one awesome magic missile spell, and then you start stabbing people with your D4. It's like, just sad.
Yeah. I tell you the one I'm sad for, Chris, and it's funny because I just played a game this weekend with AC from Lords of the Dungeon and Battletome. We played Space Station Zero, and that game uses only 12-sided die, pools of 12-sided die. And that's the I always feel so sad for, because growing up, I can guarantee you that the 12-sided die was rolled maybe about 8 times from like from me, my 13th birthday on to my 45th birthday. Until this past weekend where we were using 12-sided dies, I had to dig through all of the dice to pull out 4-sided dice or 12-sided dice.
And it's definitely the die that if you lose it in your dice bag, you're not too upset.
Right, exactly. Well, anyway, this is foolishness. We're talking about, you know, our favorite dice, but what's really important here is dice mechanisms in game. Let's talk about dice mechanisms. So let me ask you, Tony, starting off, since the beginning of our sort of gaming together, dice, you have been more on the side of Euro games as your favorite kinds of dice or favorite kinds of games. Generally, that might not be a blanket statement, but I would say out of everybody, you might be the person that would dislike dice in your games. How do you feel about dice in games in general?
I mean, it's all about the individual case, I think. Like, I think of Warhammer, right? And you're playing Warhammer and you're rolling a lot of die.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
You roll so many die that over the course of the entire game, you've rolled enough that hopefully, like, your distribution is kind of like on average, right? Like,
right.
You roll it so much that you would hope that the it would average out over the course of the game.
Yeah.
So that it should be sort of like, okay, like it's sort of probabilistic in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You can determine, okay, like over the course of the game on average, I'm going to get the average roll.
Sure.
And you might get some bad beats here, and you might get some good ones here, and it's just going to matter like where you got the good ones and where you got the bad ones, and how do you can sort of like, it becomes like part of the game, like how to figure for your distribution of die rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And it also just makes it exciting because it's like, yeah, I rolled like a 6 when I needed it.
Yeah, right. I totally agree with that, Tony. And you brought up an interesting point about Warhammer and the giant dice pools. And not only the giant dice pools are important there, it's the fact that it's a 6-sided die that's important there too. Because, and I'm going to go to my other example that I just gave, right, with the 12-sided die. We played Space Station Zero. And in that game, when you critical, it's a really weird, dice pool mechanism. Successes are even numbers. Failures are odd numbers. So no matter what you're doing, you're have a 50% chance of success or failure. The more dice you have, the more damage you'll do, obviously. So if you have, 6 dice and you roll 6 evens, you do 6 damage and the opponent is doing, blocking with their defense. So you'll take away damage. But if you get 2 12s in that pool, that is a critical hit. You double the successes of the entire thing. Now, this whole dice mechanism that I was dealing with on Saturday was insane. Number one, because it's like you're like rolling a D2 at that point. and you're rolling so many of them. And anytime that you'd roll that 12, it would do so many successes that it was impossible to defeat. So essentially, Aaron, who was playing against me, disintegrated 75% of my crewmen in Space Station Zero because he kept rolling criticals, which is weird for Aaron. But I felt like when you compare the two systems of this D12 system and the D6 system, there is an importance in looking at the probabilities of those things. Because when you're playing like a 40K, you know, the variability of success in that is based on, you know, your ability as the character, right? Like you can get a 3+ or a 4+ or a 5+ as your attack, that your target number. And rolling a bucket load of those dice is going to get you a bunch of hits and a bunch of misses. Whereas the other one is just with the D12 system that I explained, it's just so random what you get. It could be completely insane or completely nothing. And there's not a lot of control there. So I could see what you're saying about like it kind of evens out over the game, because I don't think Space Station Zero does even out over time.
It didn't sound like it did that day anyway.
Oh, it certainly didn't. What do you think, Chris? How do you feel about dice in your games? What is your just natural reaction when you see dice presented in a game?
Yeah, I mean, if I don't know anything about the game in general, I'm very cautious about dice games because I'm much more, at least as I am a gamer now, cautious about randomness in games. Mm-hmm. Especially if it goes to a point where I don't feel like my decisions matter. Mm-hmm. So I really want to take a look and see, okay, how are they used? If they're used to implement randomness, are there ways to mitigate, et cetera, et cetera. I don't mind them unless they're going to just make me chuck dice for an hour and the end result is just totally random.
I think about like agency, right? Like you're talking about control. Like what is your agency over like the game and how you make decisions and do they matter? You know, I was when Chris was talking there, I thought, you know what? Like in real life, like you don't have agency often. In fact, a lot of times you probably have less agency than you think you have.
Right.
In some cases, like the world is unpredictable and the world has, you know, shit happens.
Tony, there's a reason I play board games. It's because I don't like real life, and I want to have some agency in my games.
That's absolutely true. There's
a point there. That's true that this is a place where you can control something, right? Like, that's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to, like, have a world where, like, oh, I actually can have control something here when you feel, maybe you feel like in your real life you don't have control. There is something interesting about, like, when you're trying to model something in the real world in a game, you have that variability that dice can give you, and that can make it interesting. It's like when you go into combat against like another unit, we use that. I'm thinking about Warhammer again. Shit happens in war
for sure.
That you can't factor for.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Like there was a ditch there that you didn't see, and like a bunch of your dudes fell in or they tripped or something when they were charging. That's what happened when you rolled that one.
It rained last night and there's mud all over the battlefield. So there's like an added difficulty. As a matter of fact, back when the original miniatures games were developed, the first ones, it was the King of Prussia that did it, actually. And he designed war games with miniatures and dice specifically to plan battle strategies. And he used the dice because battles are unpredictable. There's going to be smoke and there's going to be, you know, blood in your eyes. There's going to be mud on the battlefield. It could be overcast. It could be rainy. It could be sunny. It could be anything that could happen that could screw you up. So he added dice to add those sort of unforeseen things in there. Now, you bring up a lot of great points in that in your conversation there, Tony. And I want to, you know, try to hit as many as possible. But I want to go back to player agency, because, Chris, you're talking about you want to be able to have some control over this stuff. And I mentioned earlier there when I was doing the talk up that roll and move is something that is sort of universally hated in today's board gaming worlds. They're using it in interesting ways, and a lot of, you know, progressive games are using it sometimes now. But the reason that roll and move is bad in a game like I don't know, like Candyland or something like that, there's no player agency whatsoever in a game of Candyland or Chutes and Ladders or whatever. Because you're rolling the dice and you're moving your piece as far as it says, and then you're doing whatever the space says that you move to. So you're not playing a game there. I actually, let's put it this way. People have this debate, is it a game or isn't a game? I'd say that like a game like Candyland is not a game. Because no, the game is playing by itself. It's an automation. You're the engine that's making it move by rolling the dice.
You could just as easily play both characters and just try to
exactly. Game.
See who could win.
Yeah.
We could have a, whole Express episode on what is a game.
We will do that, Tony. We got to do that. Because that's another thing that's been coming up on the forums lately is our famous defining discussions. We need to define a game. But no, but that's that's a different story. But there's no agency there. Agency is an extremely important thing. And you're absolutely right, Chris, that you don't want to, you live a life where you don't have a ton of agency. You know, when I used to, you know, work in an office and I lived in Hanover, Pennsylvania, I had to drive to York. It's about a 45-minute drive. And it was 8 o'clock in the morning and I'm driving to work and I'm rolling and moving all the way to there because I don't want to go where I'm going, but I'm going there. And all along the way, there's red lights that I roll to one. There's traffic jams where I roll to one. And it, and sometimes it takes me 45 minutes. Sometimes it takes me half hour because I rolled high. Sometimes it takes me an hour and 15 minutes. And I'm late for work. Because I rolled bad. I don't want to deal with that in a game. I don't find that part of it fun.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you're going to get to the same place no matter what.
Yeah.
It's just how stalled are you going to be along the way that it makes it more annoying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I want to bring up a Settlers of Catan, now just called Catan, because this is a game that has a lot of controversy in the community, and I think... Tony, you very much like Settlers of Catan, and Chris, you very much dislike Settlers of Catan. I know I like it a lot.
And I wouldn't say I dislike it. I'm just bored of it.
Okay. But I want to talk about the randomness in that game because that's a hotly contested aspect of that game that makes it something that people don't like anymore. For those of you who didn't never played it before, you got to at least play it once, right? Because you're a board gamer. You got to be playing Catan. But the idea is that you have a board with hexes and the hexes produce resources. Each one of them has a number on it. And every turn you roll two dice. And if that number comes up, that tile produces. If you roll a 7, nothing produces and you move the robber. So this is a thing that people complain about quite often with Catan is that there are some games where you have good pips all over the board. You know, you have good numbers, you have your settlement set up, you're ready to produce, and those numbers never come up on the dice. So your ability to win that game is impacted drastically by the randomness of the dice roll. Now, I'm not saying that I fully agree with this concept, but this is an argument that is had.
Now, this is very interesting. Startyourmeeples.com is a website that did this interesting article here. They analyzed the die roll of Catan... of a number of Catan games,
okay,
to see what the distribution ended up being. And it looks like they did 6 games here, maybe, for this particular thing that they wrote up. But anyway, it was okay. Like, they did like, what's the average number of rolls for a Catan game? And they came up with this number 80. So 80, the average game of Catan has 80 rolls in it.
Okay.
And you know, over, is 80 rolls enough to get like a good, like what I was saying earlier about the distribution? Does your distribution even out to where it meets your pips? Like you were saying, sometimes you have a bad game where you have good pips, but the number doesn't come up.
Sure.
But that would be like an anomaly, right? Like, mm-hmm, your distribution was anomalous for this particular game. But how often do those anomalies happen? And, you know, you can't be such a curmudgeon that if you have a bad game, you can't, like, if you have a bad game when it comes to, like, the score of the game, you can't still have fun playing the game.
Sure.
Well, part of the fun of Catan is actually getting resources to actually do the rest of what Catan is all about. So,
not a bad point, you know, Chris. Not a bad point.
If you don't get that, then it becomes kind of a boring game.
But that's where the trading comes in. Like, you're like, come on, I'm down on my luck. Give me a good deal here. Give me a 2-for-1.
I'm a beggar. Give me something good. Help me.
Give me a 2-for-1 for that brick that you need.
But I think you're right, Tony, that like the probabilities of the dice rolls, there is a curve there. And obviously you're going to roll a 7 more often than you're going to roll anything else. And that's the one you don't want to get. Because it doesn't produce anything because the robber moves. But I mean, you know, all the rest of the die, like the 6s and the 8s and the 9s and the 5s, those are the more valuable spaces. And there's been times when I've played strategies, I'm going to go with a lot of 11s and 12s and see what happens. And it doesn't usually work out too well. So
what I would think would be interesting, I don't know, I haven't looked through this whole write-up that this website did, but it'd be interesting to know, like, how often did the distribution of numbers factor into who won? So is it, like, is it predictable? Like, if if you somehow picked the statistical outlier for that game, did you win?
Yeah.
You know, you got that 11 or that 10 and that came up more than it was, you know, supposed to. And did that make you win? Or was it like, were there other factors that were, you know, in your control that made you win? So you have a lot of things in your control, right? Like, how do you expand? What did you pick as your starting location?
Mm.
How well did you negotiate your trades? So there's other aspects. There's enough other decisions in Catan to me that I think you have the room to counteract that somewhat by your choices, by the things you do have control of. Now, you roll bad and some bastard, you know, blocks you in. Might be a different story.
Yeah.
Tony, it's interesting. You said something interesting in there that, like, dice, the randomness of dice, to me, is bad whether it benefits me or not. If it's like crazy overpowered, and I see this in games that don't have dice. I think of games like Marrakesh, where you have the hidden gold tiles that are already dealt out at the start of the game. Now, if I happen to turn over one of those, that's like, oh wow, this randomly just fits into my strategy. To me, that's no different than just rolling good on dice the whole time.
Yeah, you're right.
I didn't make that good decision for me that gave me those points. Something else out of my control did. That takes away from the experience of the game for me. So I don't like this randomness for the good or the bad of my play.
See, let's talk about Castles of Burgundy, for example. Castles of Burgundy is a game where you do roll the dice, and the dice, you're beholden to the dice to be able to do actions on the board. Now, the difference between the Castles of Burgundy dice rolling concept and the Catan dice rolling concept is if you roll bad in Castles of Burgundy, you still get to do stuff with it. You know, like, you don't get what you wanted, but you can get stuff that'll help you later to mitigate that randomness, if you know what I mean. Like, you could take like different tiles and things that'll help you, right? And you can work on things that are sort of future projects with Castles of Burgundy's dice rolling. And so there's no rolling a 7 and you're just like, oh, nothing happened. You know, I moved the robber.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I think that's where more modern game designs are starting to excel at sort of picking up some of the slack that maybe Catan has. I'm not saying that Catan's not a great game. I love Catan, and I will play Catan just about any time someone asks because I like it. But I ain't gonna lie and say that it ain't, you know, it's not imperfect. There are things to it that I think could be improved upon. And I think even, you know, rest in peace, Klaus Treiber, knew that, because a lot of his subsequent versions of Catan, you know, like Starfarers and some of those other ones, they changed how that resource production works a little bit to make it easier. I can't remember the exact details, but in Starfarers, if you roll the robber, you still get resources. I think it's actually good for everyone. I think everybody gets one across the table. It's like a boon. So like, he actually changed it to be a little bit more forgiving in that respect. But that game also has a lot of other things changed as well, just to make it a different game.
There's one thing I want to bring up that sort of spawned in my brain here as you were talking about that, and that is, like, how do games that don't have the randomness deal with having something similar in the game? And it made me think of Blood Rage, right? So in Blood Rage, you have combat. And you're adding,
Chris. I put it on the document. So if he sees the word Blood Rage, he's gonna go for it. It's under deterministic combat.
You have the power cards, right? You have those cards that add to your power.
Sure.
So there is a randomness to your getting that card. It was randomly in the stack of cards that you were dealt to pick from.
Sure.
And then, yeah, it was made less random by the fact that it was drafted versus rolled. But you're still, there's a downside to drafting versus rolling in a game design.
Yeah.
Right? So in a game design, like, if you're designing this game and you're thinking about the experience people are going to have, the downside of a drafting mechanic is people have to sit there and go through the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes time.
Yeah.
Now, it can be kind of fun sometimes, but it can also be like, especially if there's a new player mixed with experienced players, like the experienced player is just going to look at the cards and they're going to be like, oh, I know like what I want because I play this game 10 times. I'm going to pick this one. And then they pass it. But someone who's new to the game, they're going to want to sit there and look at every card and they're going to ask questions like, what does this card do? What does this mean? That takes time to... That might not be the most enjoyable time that you spend playing the game to go through that and have to draft and have to make that decision. It can be fun, but it can also be taxing.
Well, when
I
roll a
die, I just roll the die and it just shows me what I got.
A lot of that, Tony, too, is like people who are new to the game and looking at these cards, they might not even, they could read them all they want. They might not know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a lot easier to just roll a die, and that's like...
Sure.
Carson City is another game that I love, and that does something kind of similar, right? You have the die, but a lot of times you can mitigate that. You can have so many more guns that you just, yeah. The die doesn't matter, mm-hmm. which is kind of another interesting way to play that game. Like it's a D4 or something, I think, that so it's a lower number, and you can deterministically overcome whatever they roll.
Sure.
So you know, like, oh, they don't have a posse at all, and my posse's so big, it doesn't matter what they roll. I'm going to win the combat. So that's another one that I think is interesting because you can mitigate it so much to make it not matter. Or it could be like, well, it's very unlikely that they'll roll because maybe, you know, if they roll a four, they win the combat. Otherwise, I win. So you could take that chance. And that taking that chance can be like thrilling, right? Like
yeah.
The thrill of the battle has a different element.
I wanted to say, you were commenting on the thrill there, and Blood Rage specifically was part of the conversation. And that's one thing that I was thinking of when you were talking about it. And it's a, it's sort of an argument for dice. Blood Rage is kind of a long form randomness. You're saying there is random because it comes up in the deck, it comes in your hand, you draft it, and then you use it when the time comes. So it's like you're playing the long game there when it comes to randomness. Randomness here, 15 minutes later, you get to use it in a sense. So when a dice roll comes up, I think it's more exciting when you go into combat with somebody and the it's dealt. Or the damage is dealt right here with this system, with these dice in this moment, there's a more of an exciting aspect to that. It's kind of like when you're playing Spartacus and you're rolling those pools of dice versus each other and you're moving around and you're taking damage off and it's going back and forth like that so much. There's an excitement to that, that even though Blood Rage, I think, is a great strategic game, I wouldn't call it nearly as exciting as some of those other combat systems.
I don't know. Like, I get that same thrill to some extent in Blood Rage because of those numbered cards.
Yeah.
And it's like, do they have the seven?
Mm.
And I think that's the highest battle card you can get in Blood Rage is a seven.
Yeah.
Do they have the seven? Probably not. But you can, again, that game, you can get so many troops that the seven doesn't matter, mm-hmm. but you could have that guy that you think is playing the Loki strategy, but then all of a sudden, instead of playing the Loki strategy, he has that one guy there and he plays a seven and now he's got eight battle force or eight power in that. And he wins a battle. And you're like, what? So you can have that thrill.
Scythe also has something very similar in the respect that you can see on the board how their power is building up, and you know whether you can physically defeat that person or not, all, you know, on the table. But there is that little bit of randomness with the card play. You get to add a card to your battle at that point when the combat comes down to it. So there's just a little bit of tension there.
I like that you brought that one up, because, I mean, it's kind of like a D3, right? But, like,
yeah.
You don't have a D3 so that you have these cards that you're dealt instead. So it's very similar to a die mechanic. Mm-hmm. But the thing I like about Scythe is that you have to spend a resource in conjunction with the battle, right? So you're spending that military resource. I forget what the name of it, you know, actually yeah. is, but you're spending that and you have to build it back up. You have to acquire more of that resource.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And I like when games implement die as part of, like, you have to buy them in some way, like mm-hmm. you have to spend a resource to get the die, and then the die does something. And I think there are some Euro games that do interesting things with die and it still feels like a Euro game.
Yeah.
Well, I think of like Euphoria is very much Euphoria with its worker dice, I think is a cool way of handling your workers getting grumpy.
Oh, for sure. Well, the higher their die value, I believe the smarter they are, and the smarter they are, the more they realize they're being oppressed. And that makes them mad.
you gotta hose them down with some water.
That's right, or electrocute them. But that's such a
great game.
That is such an amazing one to bring up, Chris. Euphoria, because that's an interesting way of using dice in games. That's not like what we've been talking about prior. That's a worker placement game where the dice are your workers. Alien Frontiers is similar to that. We've been talking about this a lot lately. With some of these games. And I very much enjoy that concept. And one of the main reasons that I love the concept of dice worker placement games is because generally they have dice manipulation aspects to them. Like Tony was talking about this just a little bit, and I'm glad that it's sort of tied together here, because I love the idea of getting special abilities where you can modify your dice, whether they be like, oh, this character that I hired over here allows me to turn the pip up one or down one based on what I want it to be. Mm-hmm. Or this other guy gives me a reroll every time that I roll a one. So I get to reroll all my ones in the pool, you know, every time I do that. So building a tableau of abilities that help me mitigate the randomness of the dice, that's a game in and of itself right there.
I think Merlin is a wonderful example of that.
Yeah.
Because you can go around and get those dice rolls can be really important. So getting those tokens that let you either flip the die or add pips or whatever and manipulate that die in some way is kind of rewarding, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, look, I planned for it. I'm ready. And then, you know, at the right moment, you have that ability like once to use it. It's just kind of rewarding because it's a planning. It's rewarding your planning.
There's another game that I wanted to bring up, Chris, that we have not played in years, and I would love to play it again one of these days. And I think it ties together with this conversation of dice manipulation, and as well, going back to Blood Rage that Tony was talking about, drafting. Dice drafting is becoming a big deal thing. We play Sagrada all the time with my family. Sagrada is a great, great dice game. It's a nice little puzzly dice game where you're drafting the dice. But here's the game I want to talk about, Chris. Dice Castle. Boy, it's been forever since we played Dice Castle. And
that is a great, great game.
My
goodness. A lot of fun.
The dice in Dice Castle are so cool because you're drafting, what is it, like animals and people, and like you roll the dice and they just come up with different sides, you know, and it's like it's wood or it's like warriors or it's, you know, sheep or anything like that. So they become all these dice become the resources, and you go around the table drafting them so you could build your castle with this stuff and build up sort of the forces or whatever. I forget. It's been so long since we played that game.
Oh, I know.
But boy, I love that game. I thought it was such a really good game, and I bet it's completely and utterly out of print by ages. Somebody should pick
this
up.
It's in the Vortex somewhere.
People should pick this game up and revise it. Not, I don't know about make it better. I don't know, but come out with a new version of this game, because I think it's a hidden gem.
Well, I'll tell you, Jamie, if you haven't played it yet, I would recommend you play Dice Settlers.
Dice Settlers. I've heard of it many times and never got around to it.
It gave me very much the vibes of Dice Castle, but it's more of a an exploration, land management, resource management style game instead of building a castle. It's got that whole dice drafting aspect in there. I played it once and it was just, it was a great game.
Well, it looks beautiful. I love the little tiles with the buildings on them and stuff and cards. I'm happy with that. I love stuff like that. That stuff excites me. That makes me happy to see games like that.
Yep. I definitely recommend that, Jamie. I think you'd love it.
Well, let's end the episode off with one real quick thing. Let's say, what are some of our favorite dice games? Tony, do you have a favorite dice game that you actually like? Because you're not one that loves dice generally.
I don't know. I guess not. Carson City. I don't know. I can't think of one. Warhammer, I guess. Miniatures games.
Well, you know, I guess you can say they're dice games. I went to Tony first because I knew he would not like them. Chris, what about you? What's your favorite dice game? One that you recommend? A game that like relies on dice?
Well, I mean, I think I just gave it to you, Jamie. Dice Settlers, I think, is one that does everything that I like in a dice game, because I do love the dice drafting. Like, my village was a really cool dice drafting mechanism. I like dice drafting, and it's a Euro.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Dice Settlers is one that I would point everybody to.
And I think, well, of course, I just mentioned it a minute ago, Socrata is probably one of the best dice games I've ever played. But I'm going to give you the actual best dice game that's ever been designed. And it is about as pure a dice game as you could possibly come up with. And that game is Strike. Strike is a game in which you have a handful of dice. These dice are six-sided die, and they have pips on five of the sides, and one side is an X. These dice are gladiators. You also have a bowl in the middle of the board, which is an arena. And at the beginning of the game, you toss one of the gladiators into the arena, and he comes up with a certain number. Now, when your turn comes up, you take one of your dice and you toss it into the arena. If the number of the die that you tossed in doesn't match any of the numbers of the dice in the arena, then you can either pass or you can roll another die into the arena. And you roll that die in there and you're smashing the dice together. That's why it's called Strike, because they're bouncing around together. And you're trying to get dice to come up with the same numbers. When that happens, you take those dice out and you put them in your pile, and it's the next player's turn. So you can keep pushing your luck, throwing dice in there, trying to get those matches, but you might not do it. You might want to pass, because the game's going to end when there's only one player with dice. Now, this is very simple. Here's the big hook that's awesome. If you ever happen to roll your dice into that thing and all the dice come up and you pull the dice out and there's nothing left in there, the other player has to throw all of their dice in at once. And this is a big deal. This game is wild and crazy and bananas, and people go crazy and yell and hoot and holler, and it's one of those event games. Even though it's about as dumb as possible, it's the simple throw the dice in the arena there. Your gladiators are fighting in that arena. But man, is it ever fun. It's just a fun game. And Chris, I know you're over there smirking. You should try this game again, because it's beautiful and you will like it if you just get into the spirit of it.
Maybe I'll try it again this year.
Yeah, maybe
just
you
have
will.
To get like five growlers in me and they'll be good.
We'll play it at Origins. You play it with Rodney. You and me and Rodney and some others will play it at Origins, and you'll love it. I guarantee it.
All right. I'll give it a go.
All righty, Cabal. So that's going to wrap up the Express episode for this week. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us here today. Please jump over to Facebook and like us. Hit us up on Twitter and go over to Board Game Geek and check out our Board Game Geek forums. And keep a lookout on all of our social medias, on our Board Game Geek forums, on the show, and on Kickstarter. Soon we're going to be launching the new official Secret Cabal Discord channel. And one last thing that's very important. If you want to support the show, you can obviously go over to patreon.com/thesecretcabal if you want to support us monetarily. Or if you want to head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a review. That's a huge help to us. It helps new Cabalists find us. So head over to iTunes and do that. And of course, come on back next week, because we have a beautiful, wonderful, fantastic episode of Battle Tome coming, where we're going to be talking about some amazing games, and I'll go into more depth with that Space Station Zero that AC and I have been playing. And of course, after that, another absolutely fantastic, wild, crazy, bananas, brilliant, bombastic, magnificent, monumental, and machugan episode of the Secret Cabal Gaming Podcast. Good night, everybody.
Hey, good night.
Adios.
And that wraps up another episode of the Secret Cabal Express. If you've enjoyed this episode, please join us again next week and every week for more content from the Secret Cabal. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and join the Board Game Geek Guild at boardgamegeek.com/guilds/1145. To support the Secret Cabal, check out our Patreon fundraiser initiative at patreon.com/thesecretcabal. And remember our motto, striving lest our company be lazy, cowardly manure.